name's Michael O'Connell. Today, I'm here with the founders of the Riveter Magazine, Joanna Dimkiewicz and Kaylin Ralph. I think I got your name correct, Joanna.
That's actually perfect.
Oh, cool. Well, then don't ask me to say it again because I've already forgotten how to pronounce it. Anywho, I want to talk about the magazine that you're doing. It's online and also print, long-form journalism magazine. Can you tell me a little bit about The Riveter, how it came to be?
Well, I guess we can start with how Kaylin and I met, and it just kind of like snowballed from there into what it's become. We both went to the University of Missouri School of Journalism, and we met there in various magazine writing classes. Because we chose that as our emphasis, magazine writing, and Kaylin also did publishing. And we sort of noticed, well, we graduated in 2013, just to give you a timetable.
Okay.
Because our first discussion about maybe starting a magazine or starting something to sort of fill this void of the gender disparity in long-form writing and magazine journalism started in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
When the ASMEs came out, do you want to talk about our editing class?
So the 2012 ASME Awards, when the list of nominees was announced, we were actually sitting in our magazine editing class. So it was a really good opportunity. We had like a full class discussion about this, and it was kind of, the discussion ended up being very circular. Like, okay, well, what are we going to do about this? Well, what are women going to do about this? Why is this a problem? On and on and on. And
in the ASME Awards, I don't know, guess the ASME Awards are given out every year, and they're given out to like writers, and like magazines themselves get like, oh, best overall magazine, best design. So it's just like various awards given out for that year, and many of them are given out for like writing categories.
And not one woman was nominated in any of the major writing categories of the awards. So that was very frustrating. And I think we were even more aware of it because we were sitting in a journalism class at the time that was predominantly women. And we just like pretty much texted each other in class that day, and we were like, all right, let's start a magazine. And that would have been our junior year.
Yeah.
It didn't happen right away.
Did you think at that time that you're going to just do a print magazine or an online magazine, or was it just like, we need to come up with some sort of publication to address this issue that had
rooted itself? Pretty much. I think it was more at that point. I mean, we were juniors in college, and at that point we didn't really have like a concrete idea of what it was. We were just like, we've somehow got to change this somehow with some kind of publication. And The Riveter didn't come to be until a year later, almost exactly a year later.
March
of 2013. So we used all of that time to then come up with a concrete idea because we realized the problem was still there. So we needed to do something about it. So let's make a print magazine. Let's make an online magazine. Let's create a community. We had a much better concrete idea at that point in our lives. But the catalyst was definitely that sitting in our editing class, surrounded mostly by women, honestly. I mean, we say this all the time, like, we don't have stats to back it up necessarily, but at least at the University School of University of Missouri School of Journalism, and at least in magazine writing classes, I can't talk about broadcast or anything like that, it was mostly women, female students, like maybe 70-30 or 60-40 or something like that. So it was always so bizarre to see so few female journalists represented in examples we were given in classes and things like that. And we were just looking, we just wanted to know, where are the women?
Oh, no. It's, you know, hearing something like this really surprises me as well, because the newsrooms I've worked in the last, 10, 15 years, there are a lot of women in there. I work for two women. Our online staff are women here at this office. So it always surprises me when suddenly you encounter a situation like this where, well, why aren't there more women represented? What I find really nice and great about what you guys are doing is that, you saw a problem And you decided that you were going to take it on yourselves and go out and launch your own magazine. Tell me about that process. What, you know, how you came up with the concept of the Riveter, and how, you know, what the steps were to launch that.
So March 2013, when we actually officially launched, it was a super modest secret launching at a coffee shop on WordPress. We had just come from a workshop that the journalism school sponsored. And the I guess it was called The Next Wave of Journalists. Right. I don't remember exactly what the conference was called, but it featured Mike Sager's then a new publication called The
The Next
Next
Wave of
Wave.
Literary Journalism.
And that was sort of like the tip of the iceberg. And I'm only telling this because then that was like then we immediately started the
You
Riveter,
like
basically that
we bought the
night.
URL basically
Yeah.
that night.
Because long story short, I suppose, at this conference, there was a lot of hype built up to it. I remember being pretty excited, like, ooh, the next wave of new literary journalists. And when you think literary journalism, that was something that I personally wanted to do. That was something that I love to read. And so we wanted to go to this conference and learn as much as we possibly could. But then the reality of it was that in this anthology, out of the 19 stories featured, only three were written by women. And then at the conference itself, they had a panel of some of the writers there, so we could ask questions. And the panel was all male. So we got into a discussion about it, not us personally, but the audience itself of journalism students, like with Mike Sager and other panelist members.
The all-male panel.
The all-male panel, yeah.
Well,
A woman stood
there
up
are a
and
lot of
said,
us in journalism. I'll just say that. Okay, but go on.
A woman stood up, one of our peers stood up and just asked sort of the obvious question, like, why and how did that happen? And it all came down to a lot of like excuses and reasons, and I don't know, we don't have to get into that. There was sort of like this like blurting out of being like, well, if you want it to happen, just go out and do it yourselves. Or sort of like hey women, make yourselves known or
Yeah, I
something
think it
like
was like,
that.
you ladies, like, just need to get it together
Yeah,
and
just
just
do it
do it
yourselves.
yourselves. And we're
Yeah.
like, okay.
So we were like, I mean, a bit flustered
A
by
bit more
that. Like,
flustered
it
than
wasn't like, okay. It was more like, okay. But.
You know, I was going to ask you how that made you feel. I mean, on the one hand, it's like, well, yeah, we can go out and do it ourselves, but then on the other hand, it's like, well, but why aren't you going to sort of address the situation in your own publication and in the way that your own newsrooms are set up
Right.
or
I mean,
represented?
why doesn't this platform already exist? I mean, yeah, exactly. Why aren't you going to address the problem yourselves? It definitely seemed like a cop out, but in our case, a cop out that has proved to be, I mean, it got us fired up. We were so fired. So we literally scooted off to the coffee shop. Like Caitlin said, we bought the URL. We were like, the Riveter is happening right now today. Because
we did then approach Mike
Oh,
Sager
yeah.
after the conference, and we were like, okay, like, we're gonna do it then. And he was very willing to help, and
Yeah.
we still get a lot of help from him, and we're collaborating with him on some other projects. So
Yeah.
to his credit,
I mean, of course, yeah,
he
of course,
fired us
his
up, but then
credit.
he followed
We
through.
totally marched up to him like, we're gonna do it. Watch out. But now we're partners in crime with Mike Sager, so
So it worked out really
it's a
well.
great we love that story.
No, I think it's important that you were inspired and you know I think in a broader sense, I think people need to understand that sometimes if there's not something out there available and you beat your head against a wall trying to change things, that sometimes the answer is in front of you, that well, maybe you the tools are available for you to go out and show people what you can do and what type of publication, you know, that you envision that addresses what you want it to address, you know, go out and do that yourself. So I think that's really admirable that you're able to go out and do that. So you buy the URL, you set up a page on WordPress. What about content? I'm assuming you're not providing all the content, or are
No,
you?
we the first few months were admittedly a bit like rough as we were sort of trying to figure out what it is exactly that we wanted to do, because obviously we wanted to promote and empower these female long form writers, but we don't want it, I mean, we wanted it to be like a community of like interviewing writers or doing book reviews, and making it sort of like come full circle, not just a bunch of long form stories for people to read, especially since we started online. At first we had to realize that an online audience is different than the print audience, which we got to later. And so our content in the beginning was like a Q&A with Elizabeth Sist, and mm-hmm. we reached out to some writers and buzz that we were at a journalism school. We were very fortunate to be at a journalism school because it started to get pretty buzzy where mm-hmm. people heard about it and then they wanted to hook us up with connections they had. Or, for example, our creative director was an MU grad, and I can't say this for sure, but I'm pretty sure she heard about us through like Mizzou somehow.
Yeah, like, or
and then reached
media.
Out to us. Yeah. So that was just like the building process, and then we did a crowdfunding.
Yeah, could you talk campaign. About that? About how that came about? Now, you didn't do it through. I think most people they think a Kickstarter, but you didn't do that. You did something different.
Yeah, we did Indiegogo.
We did Indiegogo. At the time that we launched the campaign, a lot, it seemed that a lot more like media projects were using Indiegogo. So that's basically the only reason we picked that over Kickstarter. But yeah, it worked out really well. We wanted to, as the buzz kept growing and we were thinking about how we were not only as writers, but as readers, like we still were reading print magazines, especially mm-hmm. for the long form. So we were like, why shouldn't The Riveter have a print component if we can financially make that possible? So we did a $2,000 campaign, and the money from that we used to cover the printing costs as well as to pay the women who wrote the long form in that mm-hmm. issue.
Yeah. And that was just like a 30-day campaign, and a lot of social media goes into that. Mm-hmm. And we think back, and
I think it was 45 days.
Yeah. I mean, it's like a short amount of time just to get people mm-hmm. fired up. So like, oh, you only have 5 more days to donate, and then you create the perks. And then we had like a launch party in our hometown. Well, not our hometown, but our college hometown in Columbia. Yeah. As one of the perks, and that was the launch of our first issue, first print issue.
Okay, and now I don't have the print issue in my hands, and I'm trying to envision what it looked like. Could you sort of describe it?
Well, you can see us, right?
No, well, this is an audio podcast. This isn't a video, but I can certainly see it.
Yeah, we'll show you through our video. But to describe it, we wanted it to be. Kind of for practical purposes, it's smaller than a typical glossy magazine. Perfect to fit in a purse or
I guess.
In a briefcase. Yeah, like for comparison, there's the New York Times.
Okay. So was there any advertising in that, or was it all just the content?
No advertising.
Do you think at some point you might want to do something like that?
We're exploring.
We're definitely exploring. It would be super catered to what we believe to be sort of like an aesthetic of not interrupting the reader experience. And we would love to support other magazines or organizations or institutions who are promoting sort of like similar ideas that we are. Mm-hmm. And in that regard, that would be advertising for sure.
We're looking into trade advertising with other literary, magazines that we respect, as well as, university writing programs. We would
grants,
like to advertise those,
like that.
Grants, contests, things like that.
We're in the process of hiring a staff right now. So actually, I'm not, I feel good saying this. We're still looking for someone to work on our advertising staff. Mm-hmm. But we have recently hired some online editors and a publicist. And we're just really, really excited to get the team like growing and growing and
team together.
Yeah.
So is the second issue out, or are you still working on that?
We're still working on that.
Okay. When I was following the link about for downloading the first issue, you can get the issue either in print or in digital.
Yeah.
Right. Now, how does that work? How did you set that up?
Like with our online store, or how do we have the digital?
Tell me about your online store.
The reason
I'm kind of doing this is that I want people to take away from our conversation that questions they might have about, you know, being in a similar situation that you are, that they want to do something like this.
Oh, yeah.
They haven't thought about all of the different,
like
what to do.
We used Store Envy, which is basically an Etsy website for magazines, books,
or like media.
Yeah,
media
DIY products. Media, I guess, is a thing. So we have a storefront and a marketplace on this website, Store Envy. So through that website, using PayPal, you can purchase the print edition, which we're doing direct shipping ourselves right now, and then there's the digital edition, which we send to you.
Okay.
For a download.
I was gonna say there's a difference in cost.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the difference is?
Well, the digital is $9.99 and the print is $12.99 plus shipping.
To cover plus shipping. Okay. To help to defray the cost of the printing.
Of printing. Yeah.
Okay.
And we are also available. We moved to Minneapolis in September because Minneapolis was a place that I was semi-familiar with. I grew up sort of half here, half in Iowa. But anyway, so I always kind of knew that the art community here in Minneapolis was super supportive, and always, like, you would go to a coffee shop and just hear people talking about their new projects and whatnot. And on top of that, we sort of did a little bit of research, and Minneapolis is a very supportive literary community. The Loft Literacy Center is
the biggest
in the United States, and it's just a literacy center that offers like classes and workshops, and they have a library, and it's really cool. So when we first moved here, we knew we had to reach out immediately to independent bookstores, because that's sort of like another venture that we totally support, bookstores and print, because we're print junkies, obviously. So we are for sale in a few bookstores in Minneapolis and St. Paul. So for anyone else who wants, I mean, it was really important for us to just like literally get dressed. We get dressed. I mean,
what?
I don't know. I'm trying to make it dramatic, but like go to bookstores and just introduce ourselves and say what we're doing. And all the independent bookstores that we visited were super enthusiastic about supporting us, and they put us on our shelves right away. So,
well, let's talk a little bit about long form journalism. We've been, you know, I don't know if you've listened to our podcast before, but in recent weeks, the topic of long form has come up, and sort of, you know, journalism itself is changing, and different aspects of it are changing. But we're having this kind of ongoing discussion about, you know, the future of long form journalism and what form it is taking. And you know, I think what you guys are doing is it's you know, a self published, you know, you were inspired by an issue something that you wanted to redress. What is it, you know, what do you see as the state of long form journalism right now? Let's start there.
Oh, God.
Okay, well, let me back up. That's probably too hard a question for anybody.
It's too broad.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. Why do you like long-form journalism?
That's a bit easier.
Sorry.
Do you want to start?
I think when you ask, like, what's the state of long-form journalism, it is kind of sad because we both go, because I don't know. I will always love long-form. And I always have, because you can learn so much from that type of writing, because the genre itself is actually quite broad, I would say. You could have personal narrative, you could have sort of like a creative nonfiction, you could have like a retelling of someone else's events. You could have like a lot of research incorporated, because you have all that space and all that area to cover to tell one story. And I think that type of storytelling, in fact, is quite universal. And I don't think that it's something that we should let die off. I don't think that it ever will. I don't, personally. But there's all this, like, jibber-jabber, like, is it dying off? Will it die off? Will we give up on it? And I don't think that we will, simply because of the breadth of information and storytelling that you can get just from one long form piece.
Yeah.
And I think it leaves a lot of opportunity for creativity and like progressive cultural discussion.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to die either. I think it really, as long as there are people who seek it out, and as long as there are people who, like you, who are interested in fostering it, I think, you know, it's going to continue on. I think, like everything else in journalism, there are changes going on. There are challenges that kind of have to be addressed and figured out. But you know, we'll see. We'll see how this is going to go. I mean, having long form online as opposed to in print, you know, that raises all other types of issues about, you know, how you read it. Do you read it on a laptop? Do you read it on a tablet or your phone? You know, where do you read it? It's, you know, the way the reader interacts with journalism is changing. So I think that has kind of an effect on this as well.
Yeah, I think the only other thing about long form that you don't get in any other type of journalism, and that's what's so interesting and important, is that you can blend so many types of conventional writing. Like something we've really been exploring with The Riveter is like making up, like we've been really championing this personal expository essay, you know, like it's one of the only areas in creative writing or journalistic
kind of
writing
fluid.
Where it's very fluid and you can
yeah.
take pieces from like conventional tropes of what journalism has been for the past, you know, hundreds of years and kind of meld it into something that it might be the only piece of its kind, you know?
Right.
And as far as reading online, I think, I don't know, like with our new online editors and we're talking to a web developer perhaps, or we're very aware of that too. It's like, we don't want to lose this online audience, because it's true that there are some people who won't go to the bookstores like we were talking about and buy The Riveter, or they won't want to buy it online and then wait, you know, 3 to 5 days or whatever for it to come in the mail. They'll want to read online, and that's fine. So we're really looking forward to our redesign of our website to sort of make that element of long form easier, more pleasant for people to read, with like certain designs that we're talking about. I don't know if you want me to like spoiler alert, I guess, but we
Let's
are doing
tell all the secrets.
A website redesign. So just because we're aware that we could also like people who don't know much about long form or don't think that they like it, if they see that there's just like this really pleasant way of reading it online, we might be able to convert them.
A way of reading
to
it online
long form junkies.
That mimics print, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of making it more accessible using the online platform first.
Right.
Yeah.
Now I was reading the one story that you had on the website, the Man Who Stopped Traffic, I think is what it was called. That I thought was really a really great little piece, and an excellent example of what you can kind of do. Just the voice of the narrator, of the reporter, the writer, and the way it tells a story. You know, it has a little room to bring in detail that kind of informs it for the reader and makes it much more real in many ways. I think that story in particular, I kind of liked the voice of the writer, and the way it sort of made me sort of care about, to a greater degree, the people she was writing about.
We agree. We really love that piece.
We were floored.
Yeah. And she was fortunate to be, she met this man. This wasn't sort of like a parachute type of story where she just dropped in and dropped out. So I think that's pretty apparent in that story itself as well.
We should mention her name probably.
Carol Meets O'Pain.
Yeah.
Okay.
Carol.
Yeah. No, it's good. And it's something you can see on the website. And of course we'll have a link to the website so people can take a look at it and sort of get an idea of what type of stuff that you want to do. Is that, would you say that that's kind of in the range of what you're hoping to get, that type of content that you're getting from your contributors?
Yeah, I
Definitely.
Would say our first issue we wanted it to be, it was really important for us to include sort of a diverse group. We had 4 stories, but make it as diverse as possible with like the personal expository that Kaylin was saying, and then Paralmita's piece, which was sort of investigative. We wanted to show that breadth of long form itself, and that we want a variety of different types of long form stories for sure. And we definitely want a variety of different types of narratives and themes, because we want to show women as universal storytellers. We don't always have to talk about motherhood, even though one of our stories in our first piece is about motherhood, but it also threads in these other themes to make it a really unique piece as well.
I think we're interested in any piece that is going to disrupt the mainstream narrative. Like, even if it's something like, obviously trafficking in India has been written about extensively in other publications, but you know, Paro's piece was amazing because it had that personal element, like, and it was different from reading about that story in any other publication. So I think, like, our biggest thing, like, we don't say, you know, we right now we're accepting stories about this, right now we're accepting stories yeah. about this, but anything that is going to disrupt what is being said elsewhere often is something we're really interested in.
Yeah.
And kind of pushing the envelope with that.
I feel like kind of need to ask this question. Are you soliciting stories specifically from women, and are you soliciting stories specifically about women's stories, or are you pretty much open to whomever, whatever?
Well, no, I mean, right now, writers. Yeah, we yeah. are only accepting long form pieces by women, and not to say that we're building a community, an all inclusive community, though. Mm. For example, yeah. one of our online editors is a male. Mm-hmm. But we're just trying to, like we said in the very beginning, even out the score in okay. a way.
In the profession.
Yeah, in the profession itself.
But the content is for everyone. We do not consider ourselves a women's interest magazine. No. Like, the stories we publish, we think, like, should be of equal interest to men as they are to women.
Okay.
Yeah, we would never solicit. Well, first of all, we would never personally say, all right, we've got a call for women-focused stories. Let's hear from you on your stories about, like, I don't know, what are the tropes, like, we love, sex and beauty.
Yeah, we don't,
because
feel
I wouldn't want to say that that's only women care about that as yeah. well. I think that's okay. not including men either. I mean, men care about love, sex and beauty too, don't they?
Yes, I think. I don't know, maybe. I asked the question. I didn't want to be, you know, I hope you didn't take it as me trying to be critical or something. I was just trying to get an understanding.
No, it's so a good people, question. So we get people it all
are,
the time.
Because the people the who are thinking, oh, this is just a women's magazine, I'm not going to be interested in it. But I, you know, and I gather that from what I was reading that you had online, that it is pretty representative. It's, I think that, you know, you're just creating a space where women writers can write what they want to write, and whatever right. that is about. And I think that should be interesting to anybody who picks it
exactly.
up.
Exactly.
Absolutely. So. It's not men against women in our world at all. We're all in this together.
Yeah. Oh, no, yeah, exactly. And I think that's how you get around situations where you suddenly have an award ceremony where suddenly where are all the women nominations, where are all the people of color nominations and things like yeah. that. Is that you need to build and solicit and go out and create and foster different types of writing and different types of writers. This has been really kind of interesting. Let me ask you one last question. What advice would you give to somebody who is just starting out and wants to either launch their own publication or, you know, go in their own direction in journalism?
Yeah, I think Kayla and I, we talk about this all the time.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it can, I mean, like, you asked us all the questions and we sort of took you step by step, like, practically on what we actually did, like the crowdfunding, hiring people, yada, yada. I think at the core of it is that you cannot be afraid of doing what you think you should do. And I don't know, that sounds really simple, but our advice that we got from that workshop, when, like, the men on the panel and they were all flustered and they said, just do it. That turned out to be the best
That's
advice
mantra.
That we've ever gotten.
Yeah.
Because even though at first we had, like, this sour taste in our mouths, like, oh, excuses, excuses, blah, blah, blah. The truth is we did have to go out and do it because no one else has.
Yeah.
So if this, like, if we want to live in a world where we see this problem and we just get fired up about it and fired up about it and then fizzle out, that's not the kind of world that I want to live in. I want to be able to do it. And I guess that's...
And it sounds, like we've laid out all these steps. It sounds like we had this like very like practical, you know, thought out approach. And really we were learning as we went along. And
you
we
stumbled
were...
along like everybody else.
Yeah. I mean, exactly. we don't have it all figured out. I don't, we would never claim to have it all figured out. And I think that the fear is what stops most people from really going out there and doing what they think they should do and doing what they think is right. And I think that you need to toss fear aside and just do it.
Wow. I was actually going to say the word fear at some point in here in the wrap up, but you said it. And I think that's a huge thing in a life lesson in a lot of things. People are afraid of failing. But the real failure is in not trying, I guess. That's an old adage or whatever, but it's true. It's so funny. I hear so many people, and certainly in my own life in doing things and doing this podcast, is just do it. Damn Nike for trademarking that. But it makes so much sense that in the end you're the one who's going to change things for yourself, and so you've got to take these chances. So this has been great, and I'm really looking forward to following you guys and see what you come up with over the next few years.
Thank you so much. This was a great
Thanks
conversation.
Thanks a lot, Michael. It's nice to talk to you.
Yeah.
Take care.
Bye. You too. Bye.
You've been listening to It's All Journalism, a weekly podcast about the changing state of media.
You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or find out more information about It's All Journalism at itsalljournalism.com.
We'd like to hear what you have to say. If you have topics that you'd like us to cover or suggestions about who to interview, email us at editor@itsalljournalism.com.
Also look for It's All Journalism on Facebook and follow us on Twitter @alljournalism.